Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by SeatGeek. It's the holiday season. Maybe you forgot someone you love and you forgot to get them a gift. There's only one thing you can do to make up for your last-minute shopping and absent-mindedness, which is to make them feel better with tickets to a game or a concert. And the only place to get tickets to a game or a concert is on SeatGeek. They do all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work. You save time and you save money and you save face with the people that you forgot about the holiday season. And guess what? You can get $20 off your first SeatGeek ticket purchase. What you do, you download the free SeatGeek app to your mobile device. You go to the settings tab. You add click a promo code. Enter the promo code S-O-U-P, the very letters that are found in the name of this podcast. S-O-U-P spells soup. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the app, settings tab, add a promo code, enter the promo code S-O-U-P, and SeatGeek sends you $20 after your first ticket purchase. So there you go, Mr. Wait to the last minute, try to get a gift at the local CVS or Duane Reade, and then find out that there's nothing left except for hair clips and bottles of Snapple. Now you've got a way to make it up to your loved ones. Download the SeatGeek app today and enjoy the show.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy Blog.
And I'm Dave Lozo.
And you're in Puck Soup. Now, here's a pop quiz hot shot. There's an outdoor game being played in Toronto, Canada on January 1st at on January 1st, 2017.
Okay.
Who are the teams playing in that game?
Outdoor game in Toronto. I'm going to say Blackhawks Flyers. Blackhawks Penguins. Flyers.
No, it's in Toronto. That's the key. Like, it's sort of a reading comprehension thing.
Oh, like where there's like a clue in the question.
Yeah, there's a clue in the question.
Blackhawks, Red Wings.
Close. It's the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Detroit Red Wings. Now, who's playing in the Winter Classic?
Blackhawks.
That's right. Blackhawks intra-squad game.
It's the Blackhawks against the Ice Hawks.
It's the Blackhawks against the Blackhawks alumni.
Mark Lazarus did a poll where he said, how interested are you as a Blackhawks fan? It's Twitter, so of course non-Blackhawks fans responded, but it was like, how pumped are you for the Blackhawks playing another outdoor game? And it was like 48% pumped, 52% tired of it. Like, that's how sick and tired Blackhawks fans are.
And you know, listen, I don't know what it is about this year. I feel like there's overall fatigue for everything this year.
I'm tired of everything.
But, like, palpable non-buzz for these games. Now, this could just be the continuing shift of excitement for the outdoor games locally. Mm-hmm. Like, there wasn't really much buzz for the Washington-Chicago outdoor game.
I remember thinking that was bullshit, but then it was the lowest rated game of all the Winter Classics, so maybe there was something
to
it.
But when you were there and you saw everybody at the stadium and they were all partying, whatever, like...
When you're there, it's great.
Yeah, so it's very much now the localization of these outdoor games. I'm sure in Toronto, like, this is a big fucking deal to have this game on January 1st, which, by the way, in the unending marketing savvy of the National Hockey League, it is referred to as the first ever NHL Centennial Classic, which, by my estimation, is also the last ever NHL Centennial Classic, for there's only one centennial.
And you know someone at the NHL got a fucking raise because of that idea, too. They brought it up in the boardroom, and they were like, genius, Kevin. Great work. You're going to be a new VP of marketing. You're the first ever Kevin who's the VP of marketing. Oh, God.
The Red Wings and Maple Leafs previously played in the 2014 Bridgestone.
It's not even trademark. The first Red Wings Leafs outdoor game ever.
Yeah, and now we're getting reruns. Well, we're getting another. Well, no, this is the first Penguins Flyers outdoor game this year, so that's not a rerun.
But they're playing it in a place we've already played.
They're playing in a place we already played it. Yeah, that's. Yeah, what the fuck? I just realized that. Yeah. It's not like they don't have another stadium there.
I don't know. I'm assuming there is some sort of reason why they couldn't do it at Penn State.
Yeah, it's called capacity. Penn State?
Oh, yeah.
No, Penn State's always had this issue of, like, I think it's, like, alcohol sales was an issue at any NCAA venue.
Yeah, because if, like, you sell
NCAA,
beer.
Did we say NCAA? Always have to check that. I didn't say NAACP. It's, like, the worst faux pas you can make.
There's a combination there.
Yeah.
No, I get it, because you don't want to have, like, you don't want to sell beer and, like, have a bunch of fans do something to make Penn State look bad, because if Penn State ever ended up looking bad after a sporting event or something like that, that would really hurt their reputation.
Yeah,
the school.
You'd really hate for them to take down the Kevin Stevens statue on the campus of Penn State.
Yeah.
Because someone did something bad in the Penguins game.
Because of the abuse of drugs.
I always thought
drugs,
that's Penn State, Lambeau Field, Notre Dame are the three places that I want to see a game taken there.
Yeah, we're basically out of like spots at this point.
Well, that's fuck, they're talking about West Point for the Rangers next year.
What does that place hold?
I don't know.
Like 30K?
It'd be safe, tell you that much.
I can
go to Bear Mountain and watch the game.
I don't think it's safe because I've seen Rutgers go in there and win. I don't know how good they are defending that place.
I guess we should also talk about that on the show this week.
What? The
fact
Army?
That a National Hockey League owner is now going to be a member of the Trump cabinet.
I can't tell the difference between The Onion and anything else anymore. Like, everyone makes jokes about fake news. I saw that and I'm like, this is a bit, right? Like, this isn't real.
The great thing, the most amazing thing about Vinny Viola becoming the Secretary of the Army is that the original question was, well, shit, like, what is he going to do with his ownership stake in the Panthers? And then the answer was, he's going to have he's going to give it to his kids. And I'm like, oh, of course the guy in the Trump administration is going to overcome any conflicts of interest or anything like that by, quote, air quote. My air quotes are like the flapping wings of a giant eagle. Lozo's hat just flew off.
Oh, my God.
He's going to not have any interest in running the team while he's Secretary of the Army.
We're all going to die. We're all going to die. I don't get it. What does the Secretary of the Army do? Is he like a stenographer who goes into meetings?
He takes notes of the joint chiefs of staff meetings.
Could you dictate this for me, Mr. Viola? Sure. Go ahead, General. He just like types away.
Well, I imagine if you're hiring Vinny Viola, that the Secretary of the Army is someone who steps in about a quarter of the way into the war and then fires somebody if he doesn't like them on a basic level.
I don't like this whole military hierarchy we have here where this guy gives this guy orders below him. Let's have like a group think tank and then push this general away, but then bring him back in when we lose a bunch of wars.
Right. Or better yet, I'm going to push this general away. And then you there, have you ever been a general? No, sir, I've only been a lieutenant. Guess what? You're a general now.
What's your background? Well, I invented calculators for the Army. You're a math nerd? You bet you, sir.
4 months later. You there, general. Would you like to become a lieutenant again? We're in the need for a lieutenant again. And I understand that you're pretty qualified.
The odds of this working, the odds of us advancing on their Western Front are only 42%. So I feel as though we should not do that.
The thing that I'll always cherish about Vinny Viola. Hey.
Oh,
is that
forget about it.
When everybody sends former players, assistant general managers, whoever to the draft lottery to be their proxy, he sent his dopey, shaggy haired son.
Yo, Dad, can I go over there and sit in the draft or what, huh? Oh, who do you think you are over here, me?
And then they won it. And then Daly's like, presenting the lottery placard to, what's your name again? Hey, it's Vinny Viola Jr. over here. What's up?
He's pulling
Aaron Eckblad, you're coming down south, kid.
He's pulling up his shirt and showing his abs. Yo.
any words you want to give to the Panthers fans? Yo, fist pump to my boys down in South Beach.
Shout out to my boy who bought my bronzer today. Yo, I look good on TSN.
Anyone you want to thank for this momentous moment for the franchise? Yo, I want to thank Gooch, Sweaty, Biggie, Smalley, Vinny T, Vinny S, Vinny R, Vinny B, Vinny D, Vinny H, and of course,
and Joe. Oh my God!
What happened to that kid, though? Like, I always assume that because of the inherent nepotism of the Panthers management, and by nepotism, I'm not just meaning blood relative, but I mean like anybody tangentially related to the Army is a part of that. Like Sergeant Slaughter, I'm pretty sure isn't GM.
That would make more sense if they tab Sergeant Slaughter to be the Secretary of the Army. At least he's been pretending to be in the Army for like 3 decades. He probably knows terminology.
Secretary Slaughter, wondering your thoughts on Aleppo and how to handle the refugee crisis?
It's pretty simple. You put him in a camel clutch.
The what?
Oh, sorry, the cobra clutch.
I'm going to turn it over to my press secretary, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. God. He loved America, that guy.
This is where I bring up, as I've brought up many times before on the show, that like that was when the curtain was pulled back on me for wrestling, was when Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik were picked up for having I think it was weed in their car in the Jersey Turnpike. They got arrested, and I'm like, Daddy, why would Hacksaw Jim Duggan, defender of America, be in a car with drugs and also the Iron Sheik?
Well, son, you're about ready for me to tell you about this. Sometimes a man and a man are pretending to hate each other for the purpose of ratings and entertainment. No!
So he's not really the ultimate warrior then?
Well, if he is in your heart, son,
oh God,
that's all that really matters.
Oh God, I didn't see where you were going with that.
Why, where'd you think I was going with that?
It's funny, like, I remember being at a bus stop in elementary school because I was a latchkey kid. And we were having moms and dads, if kids are in the car, you may want to turn down the volume for just a second.
Oh, no.
We had a discussion about a certain someone not being real. And by this time, we were old enough.
Wow. Hulk Hogan, you mean?
It was December. December. Wink, wink. It was around Christmas time.
The Peach Bowl?
And we were all like talking about how we all figured out that this certain someone wasn't real.
Your grandparents?
And I remember my friend Kevin Koser.
Kevin
Koser. No relation to Joey.
Spelled the same way?
Might have been. Huh. So kind of looks at us like with these sort of like teary eyes.
Well, he was the first one to find out.
And he was like the last one to find out. And he kind of looks at us and he goes, guys, I don't know, but like all I know is that like that certain someone's always going to live on in my heart. Like literally what you just said. And the amazing thing about it was that it occurred to me years later that we may have just blown the gig for him, like by having that conversation in front of him. Like we were around the age where you should know, but he maybe didn't.
Maybe like 16? 17?
A little bit younger than that.
14?
A little bit younger than that.
How old were you when you figured it out? I don't even remember how old that was. I remember because like I lived in an apartment. It was like a house, but mm-hmm. It was like a first floor part of the house. And like I realized the chimney didn't connect to the house. And I was like, what is up with this bullshit? How does it get in? My parents were like, we leave the door open. I'm like, we live in Harrison, New Jersey. We're not leaving the door open at 1 a.m. around here. I know what's going on. They were like, well,
I'll tell you exactly you how us. I found out. I've never told this story before. And luckily, I don't think my dad listens to this podcast. He listens to the other one.
Does he?
One. Yeah.
What the hell, Mr. Wish?
He might listen to this one. So we lived in an older house. I think it was built in like the 1920s in Mattawan. And it had a basement, which my dad eventually did the noble thing and put wood paneling all over it, which was...
You have to.
It's a classic.
Makes it cozy.
And it had a sort of a room off the basement. That's where the washing machines were and the workbenches were. And where, adults did adult things occasionally.
You mean sex?
No, I don't mean sex.
You mean kissing?
No, I don't mean kissing.
Sex and kissing?
I mean, maybe it's legal in Colorado now. So,
anal. That's awesome. Good for them.
Inside that room, this is becoming like a nesting doll. Inside that room was what is called a cold room. Now, the cold room in these old houses used to be, I imagine, where you would put, like, I don't know, like meat or whatever, like shit you want to keep cold,
wait,
I guess.
How big is this room? It's like the
size of a large pantry. Okay. And my parents used it as a storage room for like my old toys. They had old like National Geographics in there. My dad had like some of his old albums in there. And
Playboys?
Shit.
Playboys.
No, there was no Playboys in that room.
But National Geographic could get you by if you're 10 years old and it's a pre-internet era.
So it was around Christmas time one year, and I forget how old I was. I want to say I was maybe like before
22.
No, I was like maybe 9 or 10, uh-huh. somewhere around that. Uh-huh. Maybe earlier than that, I don't know.
Oh, I know where this is going now.
I opened the room. And I'm looking for like, I don't know, like an old Star Wars story or whatever, like a AT-AT or something.
Of course.
And there's a big garbage bag, and I open up the garbage bag and I see all these perfectly wrapped presents. And then like a week later, same presents under the tree.
Oh, you didn't even like confront them right then and there?
No.
I would have
gone
upstairs with a bag with my tears in my eyes.
Same presents under the tree, gift tags would say like to Greg from Santa. I'm like, oh, there it is. My parents are conspiring with Santa.
Garbage bag of lies. That's what you found down there, is a garbage bag of lies.
But I think I still went along with it maybe for like one more Christmas.
For them.
Right, exactly. For them.
You're just like playing it off in like November. You better be good because Santa's not going to get you anything. Okay, Dad, sure, whatever you say.
But it was the first moment when I realized that maybe I was smarter than them in some ways. And like, yeah, because you're growing up, you assume that your parents have all their shit together, right? And like, when that happens, and you're like, oh, the gig is up. I found this out on my own.
What was worse, wrestling or Santa?
Probably wrestling.
Wow. And you still watch it today?
Now that I know it's just a big male soap opera. Like, when you found out, were you devastated as a kid? Because it sounds like you were, by saying you would have taken the bag and started crying to your parents about it, like a little baby.
Well, I mean, if I was like 19 and I was still emotionally developing, I probably would have had a real freak out. I think it was the same sort of feeling where I felt like I had figured something out. And I was like, yeah, I figured this out on my own. It wasn't really about deception or anything, or being like, you know, lied to.
I don't know where my daughter is on it. She's 6. And when we see a Santa, she, like, I'll say, hey, look, like, we went to the Radio City show the other day for the Christmas Spectacular with the Rockettes and stuff, and the overt Christian themes towards the end, in which they actually recreate the manger and have live camels on the stage.
Really?
Yeah, really. Like, the whole thing is like, it's me, Santa, materialism, New York at Christmas time, Macy's.
Go to Saks Fifth Avenue.
And then by the end of the show, it's like, and so the child laid his head down on the manger. It's like, where did this come from, this proselytizing show?
What does it smell like in there when the camel goes on the stage?
I don't know. I was in the mezzanine. So tickets are expensive. So I say to her, I'm like, look, Vivian, it's Santa. And she's like, Daddy.
Yeah.
That's not the real Santa.
You idiot.
It's like, she's like, it's one of his helpers. And this would be an issue for me were it not for the fact that occasionally we'll be out and about during SantaCon. And I'm really, really happy she knows that the dude vomiting in our trash can outside the apartment, in no way is that the real Santa Claus.
Daddy, that's not even a helper. He got fired for drinking on the job.
Daddy, what's Santa doing to that girl?
Oh my God, dude, Hoboken SantaCon was this past weekend, and there's the police chief has a Twitter account, and he tweets out all of the incidents that happened during the course of it. And there was like one where it was like Santa Claus was throwing snowballs at two people. And one of them was a city clerk. The party was broken up. The best one was, it was like 4 o'clock. So by that point, people have been drinking for like 8 hours. A cop stopped the Santa and said, can I see some ID? And instead of giving the ID, the Santa ran away. And so, and it says it's a tweet. It's 140 characters. It's the greatest 140 character story ever told. It says like, you know, P.O. asked for ID. Santa fled. Santa was eventually detained after a 3-block chase. 3 blocks the guy got in a Santa suit.
Santa suit.
And I'm wondering too, because Hoboken is, if the chase was like down into Hoboken, where it went from like Washington to Bloomfield to Clinton to Willow, they're short blocks. I can see that being a quick, but if they went from like first to second to third to fourth, that's like a 70-second chase. Now, I don't know if this cop was wearing one of those cameras on his chest. I'm Freedom of the Information Act in that video. I need to see them.
You know Santa's pants fell down.
Oh my God, you know they did.
You know they did.
That's how they detained him. They didn't like catch him. Like his pants fell around his knees. And I want to know how he got away too. Was he like, sir, can I see some ID? And he like pats on his chest. Oh, I'm Santa. I don't know where my ID is. And then he turned and he just like ran really quickly. And the poor guy had to chase him, and it was a snowy day too. Oh, I see that.
I left my ID in the sleigh. Why would I have it on me?
I'm not in the sleigh. I can drink if I want. I'm not flying.
Yeah. This is like one of the most famous people in the world. Me, the Pope, President, Lindsay Lohan. You don't ask them for IDs.
I mean, look around. Do you see any other? Oh, yeah, I guess you do. But the point is that I'm him. I'm the guy.
I'm the guy.
There was another arrest where it said a couple got a ticket for peeing in public. I don't know if it was like a couple of Santas or like a guy and a girl like just walking home and they were like, I got to pee. Me too. And they just dropped trow and just peed in the middle of the street.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not trying to make New York out to be a cesspool of urine.
Oh,
but there's definitely been times when I've come home to my apartment and it's like my apartment's on like a side street. It's not like any near any. It's not like next to a bar or anything. And I'll be walking in. There'll be a dude pissing on the side of the building.
Yeah.
And
that's where you
he'll
pee.
Just look at him and he'll look at you.
You just
and
know.
Be like, good night.
You just know. Yeah.
Hey.
You get it.
Good job on you finding a place to take your dick out where a cop's not going to see it.
You're like, I know you got 11 blocks and it's really backed up and you got to go. I get it.
You sound like a man who might have peed on a building or two in your time.
I peed on the Spectrum at a Fish concert. In the Spectrum. Bathroom line was so long and there was like a little closet that opened to like the janitor stuff, I guess. And I was just like, oh, until you dig out and piss right in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you call it peeing on a building, but at the Spectrum, they called it refurbishing. So I think totally different.
Ba-dum-bum.
All right. So here's the thing about the outdoor games.
This is better than our Alan Thicke segment from last week.
Oh, when we transitioned from song Christian rock songs,
Christian rock parodies to
the death of Alan Thicke.
Sad news to report.
As much fatigue as there is.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be a little bit something different about these games for somebody. So, for example, right? This is St. Louis's first outdoor game, inexplicably. Because when you think of places where you might stick a game, you think about the Midwest where there's snow and shit.
Where it's cold. In January.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And where you have natural rivalries against the Blackhawks and the Red Wings and the whole thing. And, like, it'd be a really good spot to have a game. And finally, they're having it there. So, you get to have the experience of, like, those players talking about, Alex Pietrangelo, what was it like growing up as a boy and playing in the pond?
Oh, Lassie, it was a great experience.
So, like, you have that. And then, like, for Toronto, like, these kids are fun. Like, Marner and Matthews and Nylander are pretty fun. And, like, to see them experience it and get to do the whole thing and put on the gear and what have you is going to be fun. So there's still a scintilla of excitement to these games, even though the building your day around watching them probably isn't the thing that happens anymore. Like, God, like, dude, you think about the last time these two teams played in 2014, the idea of holding this thing in Ann Arbor was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it was like the thing you're like, oh, this is going to be like 105,000 fans all coming together, freezing their asses off, drinking spiked hot chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was super fun. And now you're like, oh, they're holding this thing in a nondescript soccer stadium,
an MLS
stadium. Yeah.
I'm worried about the Pittsburgh-Philly game because it's at the end of February, and I think it's a night game. Like, I feel like the ice is going to be so frozen, it's not going to be playable. Like, Toronto, it should be fine.
Right.
Are those games going to be on NBC?
I think every outdoor game is. Well, let me take that back because you're asking about NBC.
Because the Winnipeg one wasn't on TV here, was it? Winnipeg-Edmonton one?
No, that was on NHL Network.
So it wasn't on TV here.
Oh, speaking of TV, so we've been doing these polls on Puck Daddy with regard to where people watch games, and you took it's a fan poll about a lot of things, but today's edition as we tape the show was where or how do you watch NHL games? And you were marveling at the fact that
6%
of the respondents said they don't know how they watch their games.
They don't know. I was saying to our boy Tim Hines out in the bullpen there in the Yahoo offices, like it's almost like they felt as though a cop was asking them, "Hey, is that marijuana?" Yeah,
right.
Where'd you get it?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? It's like, I assume that's like illegal streams. They don't know how to like maybe convey that they're watching it through that.
We had 6% saying another way and 6% saying, I don't know. So that's 12% that are probably like, I watch it on illegal streams or I have my buddies send our ICE code.
But like, don't know is such a, it's so weird how like that answer was tied with a couple of other ones too, wasn't it? There was a couple others that were at six.
So briefly, in person at the arena, 9%, live on cable TV, 56%. Streaming through an internet device connected to your TV, like Fire Stick or Roku. Roku, by the way, is great. We just got one. 12%. Streaming through an app on your mobile device, 5%. Viewing highlights posted to social media, 7%, which, by the way, was interesting because we do another thing where we do it by region. And 12% of people in the Northeast and 12% of people on the West Coast say they watch games through highlights on social media. So basically what that means is...
But you're not watching a game, though. You're
but that's how highlights. They... That's the primary way that they watch an NHL game, is just watching the highlights, which means that it's the people in the Northeast who wake up the next day and watch the highlights of the West Coast games, and the people from the West Coast that are still at work, and they're watching the East Coast games, like, through GIFs on Twitter.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's totally what it is.
Oh,
but,
that's sad.
The reason we asked this question, because the whole survey was sort of geared towards trying to figure out how millennials are consuming the NHL and what they think of the NHL these days. I was really surprised that 56% of respondents are still using cable TV and only 12% are streaming.
Well, it's actually 70. If it's 56 on TV and the other 12 or whatever are using a device to connect through their TV.
Connects to a TV. I meant like streaming through like a Apple TV or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but actually using your what's Time Warner now? I forget. Spectrum. Your Spectrum cable.
Is that what it is? Change it. I don't know that.
Your Spectrum cable, your local cable stations, whatever, NHL Network, NBCSN, 56% of all respondents said they do that. And demographically, 18 to 34 is 45% of them are watching it on cable and 15% on like a Roku and then 7% streaming.
But I feel like it's probably still probably around 60% they get it through cable. So like with all the talk of like millennials and
cord cutting,
packaging, yeah. Like it's still everyone's still pretty much watching TV. TV's not going anywhere just yet.
The other interesting thing that we did with the survey was which, if any, of the following Stanley Cup playoff rounds do you watch if they do not include your favorite team? And tell us, select all that apply. 50% of our respondents said that they watched the Stanley Cup final. 27% of all respondents said they watched the opening round. 22% of all respondents said they don't watch any playoff games if their favorite team is not involved.
Yeah.
That's a fucking horrible number for the NHL.
Like, I'm a Giants fan, and the Giants haven't made the playoffs in 3 years. I still watch the playoffs.
Like, yeah. In MLB, like, yeah, a ridiculous number of teams, by comparison to the NHL, don't make the playoffs. But I'm probably watching the NLCS, and I'm probably watching the World Series.
Sure.
But the idea that like you don't watch any playoff games if your team's not involved.
You know what else I think it is too? I don't know. I have to see the NBA's numbers, but like the NHL playoffs are 2 months. Football's a month. Baseball's a month. Like you have to commit to 2 months of watching playoffs that don't involve your team. Mm-hmm. And in football, you're watching 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not 4 games. I guess if you're watching them all, you're watching whatever it is, mm-hmm. like 10, 15 games. Hockey, like it's an endless 4-round, 7-game series slog, as a word somebody might use to describe a Star Wars movie. Slog.
We'll get that in a second.
But yeah, like I totally get it because it's a long season. You're exhausted at the end of it. You don't really want to like say you're a Boston Bruins fan and you're in it till game 81 and then game 82. It's like you guess what? You're not going to the playoffs.
Oh, if you're a Flyers fan and Olli Jokinen.
Yeah.
You get, that was the Rangers. He fucked up in the shootout.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. Like in football, like if your team's bad, you pretty much have like 2 or 3 weeks to kind of go through the grieving process, get comfortable again, and then you can watch Patriots Ravens on Saturday at 1 o'clock when the playoffs start. Like in hockey, I don't think it's the same thing.
I think the other thing too is that it being a 7-game series, like you said, it's a length problem, not a width problem.
Well, I don't know what that possibly could mean for
in the
for
sense
me.
That in the NFL,
yes,
you're just watching a game.
Right.
I mean, you don't have to commit to watching a series.
Easier to bet on too.
Yeah, a football game is going to be pretty entertaining no matter what. There's not a lot of blowouts, I don't think, in the playoffs necessarily.
Yeah.
The teams that are there belong there. It's going to be tightly played. In the NHL, you might see some bad hockey in the early rounds.
Like that Flyers Cap series last year was just unfucking watchable. It was just this slog of defense that was just for 6 games, fucking Michael Neuvirth.
Interesting. interesting here, though, on the how, you know, what, when do you, how much of the Stanley Cup playoffs do you watch? We also split up the respondents into very interested and somewhat interested, which means diehard fans, casual fans, basically. 13% of diehard fans, only 13%, said they don't watch any playoff games if their favorite team isn't involved. 26%, so double it, of casual fans say they don't watch if their favorite team's not involved.
And 100% of the diehard fans know it's a Christmas movie. Because it is.
Stay tuned for that, too.
But, okay.
But here's the other thing I want to tell you.
Go ahead.
50% of diehard fans...
just want to come out to the coast and get together and have a few laughs. No, sorry. Go ahead. Do your thing.
50% of diehard fans dislike the character Ellis because he's obviously coked up and a bit of a turncoat. 50% of diehard fans will watch the conference final. 52% of diehard fans will watch the Stanley Cup final. 28% of casual fans say they watch the conference final. And 48% say the cup final. So basically what you have here is this. When it comes to the cup final, good job, NHL. You've convinced people that it's an important playoff thing and people should make time to watch it. And it's like nothing else in sports. But you got to work a little harder to get them to watch the Final Four.
Yeah. I get that feeling, too, from people. Like, it's so tough because, like, you work in it. And, like, by the time the conference final rolls around, I'm kind of burnt on the playoffs as, like, a writer and watcher and content creator of hockey. I don't know. Like, if you're not a fan of a team that's in the playoffs at that point, I can see why. Like, let's say you're let's say there's two teams left in the East and you're a fan of one of the other six. Like, you've just had your heart ripped out either a week ago or 3 weeks ago.
You want hockey to go away.
Yeah, like,
you don't want to watch anymore. It feels too painful.
Right. And there's the other problem, too, which we always come back to, is how they market the league. And if you market the league in this way where it's all about your team and how great your team is, and there's never, like, a reason to get into the other. Like, again, football. Like, if Tom Brady fell down a flight of stairs tomorrow, I wouldn't care, but I want to watch him play.
Like maybe like that good looking
backup
quarterback pushes him and then he goes down the
Elizabeth Berkley.
Garofalo, like, pushes him.
Garofalo.
The backup quarterback Garoppolo. Sorry. Garoppolo was the company my dad worked for when I was a kid.
Janine Garofalo was in Showgirls. I'm like,
Janine Garofalo pushes Tom Brady down the stairs. She's like, this is for Trump.
Right. I just will never ever, like, hockey is just this thing where people don't give a shit about, like, all right, Columbus Blue Jackets fans hate us because we keep saying they're bad, even though they're like 24-3 at this point, right? Lambert gets the same shit. Anyone who's ever pointed out how Columbus is not as good as their record and they're not going to be good anymore, blah, 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 blah. Those fans have existed in the time of Calgary and Anaheim and Toronto and Vancouver and all these teams that were bad teams that had good seasons. And I'm sure they kind of heard echoes of it in the background while they were loving the Blue Jackets, but now the Blue Jackets are that team, and they don't accept that. Here's the thing.
Yes.
As a sports fan, love the Giants.
Yes.
You come back to the Giants. When they were 8-3.
The New York football Giants.
The New York football, not San Francisco, even your Giants. The football Giants, led by Eli Manning, the greatest quarterback of all time. When they were 8-3, they had just beaten the Bears and the Browns.
Wow, give them the fucking trophy for that.
Super duper unconvincing fashion. And everyone in, like, power rankings that Monday or Tuesday was like, oh, we're the worst 8-3 team of all time. And I read that and I'm like, well, yeah, I think that kind of makes sense. I don't go on Twitter and start finding people that wrote power rankings and be like, actually, the defense is super good, bro. Maybe you just watch the games.
Yeah, but you know what?
Hockey fans defend their own territory so hard that they don't care about the other territories.
But it's usually because when teams are in that situation, they're not the Giants. Like, the Giants, you've got a lot of history to rest on.
You've got
a quarterback with a ring.
Two.
Oh, God.
Both against the Patriots, by the way.
I'm just going to bang my head against the desk.
MVPs, too.
You got all that going for you. Like, Columbus is... I said this in the piece this week. Like, I relate to the Columbus Blue Jackets fans being so defensive because I'm a Devils fan. And I had people tell me for years, your team shouldn't exist. Your team is garbage. Whoa. Your team's not good. Your team cheats. Your team's this.
Wait, they cheat? Oh, the trap?
Yeah. So like, I get all that. So I get the idea of being super defensive about it. But here's my, I've been thinking a lot about it. Obviously, I don't like Tortorella. I'm honest about that. If you want to say that that's a bias against your team and it's nonsensical, so be it. I mean, it happens in sports where there's somebody on the team you don't like and it's going to color how you feel about the team. I'm sure the Patriots should be lauded for being a well-oiled machine, but fuck Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. So the thing about Columbus now that's bothering me is that the people that are so defensive about the team are hurting my ability to enjoy what's happening for that team. A team that in the past, if you remember my whole Lumbus thing.
Kind of remember that.
I love them. I want them to be good. I want them to succeed. I want them to go on a playoff run that ensnares casual fans around Columbus that are like college age. You build a fan base. You have the Genesis effect that you had in Washington where all of a sudden a team becomes successful and scores of new fans discover it. And
the
you have
Genesis effect. Is that where Phil Collins showed up and he played the song from
it's when
band?
Phil Collins was shot into a dead planet and it revived the planet.
And then he screamed out, "In the living years." That was the other guy from Genesis.
Phil Collins is shot in a torpedo. He hits a dead planet. The dead planet gets repopulated. And all you hear is, "I can feel it growing in the air tonight."
Ovechkin!
Wow.
Yes.
So the other thing that's bothering me is this. I'm going to talk to my friends in Blue Jacket Nation for a second.
All right, I'm going to take my headphones off and not listen to this.
You guys need to hear this for a second. We're all friends. We don't have to put on airs, okay? You were just as skeptical about Tortorella.
I know.
You all were just like, wrong coach, wrong time. How's Angry Man going to be the guy who leads the rebuild? And you all were like, we'll trade Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones and then get Austin Matthews. Fuck, we didn't get Austin Matthews, and now the whole plan's down the tubes. None of you thought this was going to happen. Stop it. You don't have a right to stand on your soapbox and bemoan someone like me or Lozo or Lambert or anybody else who said they were going to finish last in the division or whatever when you yourselves were skeptical about it. You were just as wrong as we are.
Skeptical.
It's just that because you're fans, you drank the Kool-Aid quicker than we did. So when the Corsi was like terrible and your power play was at like 35%, we all said the thing that was logical at the time. This can't sustain itself. Now, the difference is that we didn't think the possession numbers would get as good as they are, and they're pretty good.
Yeah, they're good.
And we didn't think that the power play was going to still be clicking at 27% in December, and it is.
It's going to come back.
There's a certain amount of admitting we're wrong, but ultimately,
we
were all in agreement coming into the season that it was going to be a shit year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm tired of Blue Jackets fans pushing that aside and making pretend that they were all in the whole time.
Yep.
You were just as skeptical about this team as we were. It's just that you accepted the idea that maybe they were really good before any of us were, mainly because we hate your coach.
Okay, counterpoint.
Oh, yes, please.
Issue two, counterpoint.
Issue number four. Fans of NHL teams, don't look at things objectively. Going into the year, this is what I'm saying with the whole poll numbers and the results, is they believe so deeply in their team. They're just like, I don't know, we got Brandon Saad, he's going to be really good. Nick Foligno's going to have a bounce back here. I've heard great things about this Werenski kid. Yeah, sure you did. I think there are a large portion of them that really every fan base goes into the year and says, we're going to be awesome.
Yeah, you're saying the natural rebirth of optimism that occurs for not only hockey fans, but many sports fans. I say that as a Jets fan each year.
Yeah.
It leads you to believe that maybe there was a section of the fan base that did believe that they were going to be good.
I think so. I think that's every fan base. Like, I guarantee there are Vancouver fans. A dude on Twitter after they won their first four fucking games and three of them were in overtime. Added me him is like, bro, check the standings. Who's got the best record in the NHL? Still think they're going to finish last? And I'm like, yeah. It's been four games, man.
But even those optimists were saying after last season, and especially after the World Cup disaster,
oh, for sure,
that Tortorella was the wrong coach for the team. Here's the credit I'll give him. They are playing the type of hockey that they played in New York when things worked well. They're playing... they're limiting high danger chances in front of Bobrovsky, who's playing as well as Lundqvist used to back of that defense. And inexplicably squeezing a lot of offense out of these forwards that are your gritty sandpaper guys.
Cam Atkinson's on pace for like 90 points.
Sam
like,
Gagne, you know, had like 15 goals.
I honestly can't believe Sam Gagne is still in the league. But the other thing too is like, all right, they played what 30? Hold on, I'm getting the standings up here so we can.
Credit where it's due, man. Like he gave him some spine. They adopted this sort of underdog aesthetic. They have a goaltender that obviously allows them to play a certain style because he's got the back end covered. See also Minnesota.
But like here's the thing too is Columbus has 46 points, and because of the stupid way the standings are, they're their next closest team, or the team that's closest to knocking them out of the playoffs, is Carolina at 33. So they would have to crap away 13 points in 49 games. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how bad they are the rest of the way, they're going to be a playoff team, and you're going to hear about it then, too. Oh, remember when you picked us to finish 30th? Well, we're the three seed in the blah, blah, blah.
In the blah, blah, blah. Mm. So right now, our only hope is that Guy Boucher went to Jack Adams, because otherwise it's going to be torts. It's true. It's going to be Torts.
There's got to be somebody better.
John Tortorella.
Bruce Boudreau.
It's got to hurt. No, but that's just it. When your goalie's got a 945 save percentage, you're probably not going to win the Jack. Although, you might.
You won't win Jack. The new segment on Puck. You're not going to win Jack, starring
Willie Desjardins, Jared Bednar. You ain't going to win Jack.
Yeah, there's really not a lot of good. It's going to be Torts, is it?
Yeah, it's probably going to be Torts.
I'm looking through here.
So again, my message to all of you broadcasters out there in the podcast audience: give Guy Boucher a look. Good dude.
All we are saying.
All right, listen.
is give Boucher
give Guy a chance?
Give Guy a chance. Yeah, that's better. Yeah.
You know, now that you're singing these songs, it makes me think about the time of year where we are. Christmas time.
Simply.
And I've been thinking a lot about Christmas music lately.
Have you?
And I've been thinking about the Christmas music that I despise.
You know what? What we should do is right now, top of our heads, come up with the worst Christmas songs that we consider to be the worst Christmas songs. Well, maybe like four?
I mean, it's weird. Like I was thinking about this on the way into the studio, and I just so happened to luckily have a few examples of these terrible Christmas songs queued up on YouTube.
Oh my! Oh yeah, you queued them up on YouTube. I queued them up on my phone in a list.
All right,
I have one that I'm going to use right away. That's not part of my list though, because I want them to actually be Christmas songs.
This is
that
like
an
honorable mention,
right? So like this morning I Googled worst Christmas songs, and like the ones that come up are like Billy Ray Cyrus's Honky Tonk Christmas or something like that. Like I'm not counting those in the list. There's a Bon Jovi song. And I didn't click on it. I didn't listen to it because I'm afraid to do it. It's called Backdoor Santa. And I don't know what it's about, but I'm assuming that Santa got real lucky with Mrs. Claus one night and wrote a song about it.
Santa used to work on the docks. Reindeer been on strike.
Oh, we're halfway there. Oh, Mrs. Claus went there. Take my junk and we'll put it in there. Back door, Santa in midair. Back door, Santa. Whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa. So yeah, there's a song called Backdoor Santa. Go look that up. See what it's about.
The first one for me, we'll just knock this out, and I'm sure it's on your list too.
Mm-hmm.
This giant festering piece of garbage.
Okay. Oh yeah. I don't like that song, but I kind of do.
I hate the song so much.
Like I totally see the case for hating it. Though.
It sounds like the music from Terminator being played by the happiest person in the world, and I hate that. just shut up. Yeah, here's the other thing I hate about Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time is that it is the Paul McCartney that I hate the most, which is the goofy,
he's great,
fun,
I like Paul McCartney,
wacky uncle, now grandpa. I like the Paul McCartney
who sang about having sex with 17-year-old girls called She Was Just 17.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But yeah. Even then,
I know Paul.
But even then, like, he was the sort of like fuzzier counterpoint to Sharp John, you know, mm-hmm. like the Lennon McCarthy aesthetic is one of my favorite things. I know he's always been kind of a goofball, but like, I hate, I hate his face. I hate his face when he's on SNL.
Oh my God.
And he's got wrinkly grandma face now. Wow. And he's just always got that like goofy smile. And he says, hey, look at me. I've come up on this sketch and I'm playing the bells in the background. It's me, Paul McCartney.
Dude, if I was a fucking Beatle and I was still alive today, I'd have that look on my face every fucking minute of every day. Because I would be Paul McCartney. I'd be a billionaire.
I heard a story when I was in Hawaii. It's probably a famous story for a lot of people. I didn't know it. George Harrison lived on Maui. And he lived in sort of an unpopulated part of Maui. Mm. And he had a mansion there. Ooh, that was loud.
The cupcakes are done, folks. We'll be right back after this.
And so he was out of town. And like where he lived was sort of a secret, but like an obsessed fan found his house.
It was like in the woods or something?
And she moved into it while he was gone.
Yeah.
And she like did laundry and was like ordering pizzas while living in his house.
How long was she there for?
She was there for like 2 weeks.
No kidding.
And like he eventually like found out, I guess, somehow, and then like called the cops and they took her away. But like a obsessed female fan moved into George Harrison's Hawaii home.
She's like on the front porch waving at neighbors.
Yeah. Hey, is Mr. Harrison around? No, just give me the pizza, dude.
I noticed he didn't order this with any pineapple on it. Mr. Harrison loves that. Oh, he's trying to get off of the pineapple.
Yeah, he's more into shut up and go.
Get out of here.
Get out of here. You're not supposed to know it's his house anyway.
Man, why are you wearing his clothes? He likes it.
Even when you wear a Sergeant Pepper's outfit, he really likes it. All right, what's your first Christmas song?
Bryan Adams. Having a Reggae Christmas.
Having a Reggae Christmas by Bryan Adams?
That's a bad song.
How did this blend
into
the
list? Oh, you know this song.
Do I?
Oh, yeah. We're having a Reggae Christmas.
Having a Reggae Christmas.
Having a good time, too. I hope it's Reggae Christmas. Otherwise, I've been singing the wrong lyrics all these years. There's like a weird music video where he's like walking around in like a Broadway play type of like setting.
This is a sketch where Pee Wee Herman is helping him. Oh,
yeah.
Here it is.
That's the video. You know this. I can't believe you've never experienced this.
All right, listen. I haven't, and I have two reactions to it.
You've never heard Reggae
First
Christmas?
Of all, why did Bryan Adams try to be Sting?
Oh,
with like playing the white guy reggae.
There's
and
a
two,
lot of questions.
I directly blame this song for the existence of that band that did Why You Gotta Be So Rude.
Hey, look, we all have our hits and misses. Some of us have the summer of 69 and then we have Reggae Christmas. He made an effort to make a Christmas song. I don't blame him.
The next song I want to highlight is this piece of shit from the band Fun, which you may know as having produced someone who is dating
Fun period
Lena Dunham.
Wait, someone from Fun's dating Lena Dunham? You know, I don't know if I mind this so much.
Hold on. What about if we get towards the end?
I don't know what's happening there.
Do not adjust your dial. Yeah. That's a giant mess of a thing. If you like it, that's fine. I think it's one of the worst covers of all time of any song ever. I find that dude's voice to be good for one thing, and that's that song, Carry On. Not even...
Tonight!
Is that song I'm thinking of?
We Are
Young's pretty good, too. But he's got a good voice for like certain things, but not... Not Sleigh Ride. Also, Sleigh Ride kind of sucks anyway because I don't like that giddy up part.
Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up. Yeah.
And also because, let's face it, it's the Fox football theme.
No.
Oh my God. Light bulbs flashing over Lozo's head.
No, it's not.
It's the Fox football scene. Yeah,
play that part of the song.
This is literally Vader telling Luke and you're like, no, it's not possible. No, it's the fucking Fox football theme.
I mean, they're similar. All right, with that bell means it's time for me to tell you my second, or I guess this is my
third least favorite Christmas song. And it's kind of an upset. So I think people like it. It's the Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Carol of the Bells. Tired of it. Don't need to hear it again. Like, I don't need a hard rock version of that song. I like the bells. I like ding, 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 ding. I don't need duh, 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 duh. I don't need fucking Axl or fucking Metallica slamming that song anymore. It was at a good garage. It had its time.
I feel like it came out at a time where doing sort of a metalish cover of a delightful song was a novelty.
Yeah, now it's played, bro.
Yeah,
it's played.
Now, yeah,
it's played out.
After you get past the Ataris doing a cover of
What is it?
Baby.
What's that? What's that?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
To be fair, you were just going...
Boys of Summer. The Boys of Summer.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Like doing that. Sorry. And also the Alien Ant Farm Smooth Criminal would be another example.
The Alien Ant Farm version of Smooth Criminal kicks ass.
It does kick ass.
I like that song.
Here's a song that is really disturbing.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's going to be the same one I have. I really
can't stay. Maybe it's colder.
See, I was going to pick that one, but I thought it was so obvious.
Maybe it's colder.
It's become a meme at this point. And is that a Christmas song, or is that a song about forcing a woman to stay at your place so she has nowhere else to go?
It is a song about forcing a woman to stay at your place where she has nowhere else to go.
On Christmas.
I also think it's a song about Bill Cosby. but it's more a winter song than anything else, right?
Like Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. Lethal Weapon is a movie that takes place during Christmas.
Christmas.
This
right.
song is a song that takes place during Christmas.
Right.
It's not a Christmas song, I don't think.
But yeah, but you know, but listen, I know a lot of things in life have been revised due to the cultural shifts and shifting cultural norms. I think this is one of those positive outcomes from our changing society, in which we identify a song that is as rapey can be,
like,
and say maybe not celebrate it.
Have you seen the Key and Peele?
Yeah,
I,
the Key and Peele one. There's
really
also
good.
One, I believe it's an, I think it's SNL, where it was Sigourney Weaver and Buster Poindexter did a cover of it. So it's like Sigourney Weaver, who's got a lovely singing voice. She's like, I really can't stay. And then you hear, but baby, it's cold outside. It's like,
I'm actually terrified. I'm going to run away.
Baby, take these pills.
He was great in
Scrooged.
Yes.
The one word Christmas movie that I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. That was, he was in the Let It Ride, too. He played Richard Dreyfuss's degenerate gambling friend.
Not the Talking Horse movie, but the gambling
yeah,
movie.
The one where Richard Dreyfuss keeps winning.
Let It Ride. Show. And then what was the Bobcat Goldthwait Talking Horse movie?
Hot to Trot.
Hot to Trot. That's
Hot
right.
Hot to Trot.
Nice.
John Candy.
Now, if you combine them,
Miss
boy,
John
you'd
Candy.
Have a movie.
Did you ever read that interview they did, John Candy's kids?
Yes.
That was very sad.
Very.
I don't want to talk about that. All right, my number two. Or three or two, whatever. It's any version. You name whoever sang it. You name whoever's going to sing it. Walk in a winter wonderland. Don't like it. Not a fan of that song. In the meadow, we can build a snowman. Get out of the fucking meadow. Build your snowman in front of your house. This meadow's not yours. Just go home. And we pretend that he's Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? And he'll say, no, man. Who are you to ask about my marital status before giving me a job? What kind of bullshit is this? You can't do that. That's illegal to ask me about that. You can't ask my age. You can't ask my sexual orientation. You can't ask if I'm married to see if I can get a job from a fucking snowman. Fuck this song. Don't
There's
like
a lot
it.
Of people that think it's Carson Brown, by the way.
Carson Brown?
Yeah, like just a dude named Carson Brown. Not understanding what a parson was. So it's even more confusing. Like, who is this mysterious Carson Brown you've inserted into this narrative?
Well, you can do the job if you're... What do you mean? Oh, because I'm not or because I am? Like what's my answer? Like,
we'll
what
say,
if I said yes?
You'll say, are you married? We'll say no, man.
Yeah.
But you can do the job when you're in town.
Because, like, you can tell he's disappointed that you're not. Like, oh.
Oh, you're living in sin.
But you can do the job.
Right.
Like, but. Not and, but. It's a... You know, just don't... I don't like the message that song
sends. That
song
gets an eternal pass from me for rhyming conspire and fire.
Well,
come
not,
on.
Well,
that's pretty solid.
That's not that hard.
That song's pretty good.
Birds and Towards.
This song's a piece of shit.
Lay it on me. This your number one or
yep.
two? Number one?
Number one.
All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth.
Is that the old guy from Family Guy singing that?
See my two front teeth.
Yeah, that's weird.
See if I could
This is what's going to happen when Obamacare goes away. People are going to sing about how badly they want dental care for Christmas. Thanks, Trump.
In the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah, there's weird ones.
You really could do anything.
The hippopotamus song?
Yeah, like the chipmunk song, which is just like voices sped up. Like, you could do the weirdest shit and get a novelty hit out of it.
It's like,
and
the guy,
like, a really big show tonight. We've got Johnny Moeller with All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth, and then the Beatles.
And then right. It's like the guy in Silicon Valley who put internet on the radio. Like, that's all these people were. They were just like, I'm going to speed up the voices on this track.
All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth is a horrible song.
I have a worse one for number one, but go ahead, make your case.
It's a horrible song because it's just bad. First of all, it conflates the Tooth Fairy with Santa Claus in many ways, I believe. That makes me angry. Also, it's annoying as fuck. And also, if you go on YouTube, there's a collection of people, probably the same monsters that make their kids eat hot jelly beans and then film it.
There's hot jelly beans? Oh, like somebody fucks with their kids? And
well,
puts
yeah,
hot,
like there's an entire line of Jelly Bellies that either taste like socks or taste like fire or whatever. And like people film their kids eating it and then put it on YouTube and get like a million clicks. There's a collection of people that also have their children sing All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth when they lose their teeth. And they think it's adorable, and I think it's painful. It's
very, very sad. The kid's embarrassed about his physical appearance, and they made a song about it. Like, that's not cool.
Yeah, it's right. All I want for Christmas is the ability to walk again. What if it was that song? People wouldn't like it, probably.
Christmas is to not have a disease. Wow, okay. That's a really great two-minute song.
Yeah.
Thanks.
What's your worst Christmas song ever?
All right, This is. I thought this was going to be yours because I felt like we were on the same wavelength, but we're close. Let me just get the volume here called up on you because I wanted to get the ad to play before the YouTube thing. Here we go. Ready?
Yeah, it's the unmistakable golden tones of I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus.
I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. You're a child. You're still at an age where you believe Santa Claus exists.
Wait, did you want to play that?
I clicked the wrong button, so I had to bail. It was taking too long to get to the part where mommy was blowing daddy under the tree in front of
now,
the kid.
The problem with this being number one for me is that there's actually a good version of this song.
It's the song.
No, but
it's about a kid watching his dad fuck his mom in a Santa suit.
Oh, that
you know where kissing goes
kissing.
To at that point.
It's kissing. It's sweet.
Have you seen Bad Santa? Women love the Santa suit, my friend.
I know that, but like, it's a sweet kissing. It's not. It has nothing to do with the thing you just said.
You know what it's like? It's like the end of Jedi. You think the story's over, right? That the kissing is the end, but you know if the song goes another 2 minutes, like suddenly daddy's got hands in places and mommy's grabbing stuff, and then yeah, next thing you know, this kid is being sent to therapy for the next 20 years of his life. And I believe my microphone just cut out. No? Oh, the headphones stopped working.
That's weird.
That might be an issue.
That's fine.
Okay. All right. We can pick it up from here and just go through.
I find it to be a delightful Christmas song.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of ties back into our previous conversation. How'd you find out? I found out because yeah. Mom was sucking face with dad under the mistletoe.
Mom was cranking dad off under the tree.
Why is dad dressed like Santa, though? You're right. That's a little bit of a disturbing
Because it's a
song.
Role-playing fuck session downstairs while the kid's asleep. And the kid woke up and saw it, and now he's fucked up forever. Like, that's what happens in that song. Adults don't kiss on Christmas night in the middle of the night downstairs and then go to bed. They're not in middle school. They have sex in front of the kid. It's terrible. Mm. It's a terrible, terrible song.
Mm.
And he thinks mommy's cheating on dad. Like, it's one of two things. Either he figures it out when the mask the beard comes off, or he thinks mom's cheating on dad. Like, it's a horrible song.
But honestly, like, maybe the kid identifies that it's a marriage that's not working. And like, how cool is it that mom found an amazing guy like Santa? Like, how cool, I mean, Santa's like the best guy.
Kids are like, I'm gonna get toys every day.
Yeah. Dad's a dick, and like, dad's never around. He's always working. And granted, Santa's never around either. But we know he's working.
No, but like, he's around 363 days of the year, probably.
Right, he's around in your heart, too. So it's like, so like, maybe the kid's really happy because ultimately, you know, mom's in a better place.
Well, she's not dead. She's just, the marriage is dead. She's not dead.
You know who I would like my mom to be with?
The Easter Bunny?
Yamir Yager.
And knowing Yager, he's probably going to make his way around at some point to every woman on the planet. So at some point, you may be able to call him dad.
By the time you hear this show, there's a very good chance that Yamir Yager will have broken Mark Messier's second overall mark, if you will. They're both tied as we did this podcast at 1887 overall. And that's a hell of a total. Messier or Yager, who's the better player?
Oh, Yager. For sure.
I think so too. Yeah. But I don't think that I saw like people were outraged at the idea that Yager is a better player than Messier.
No. Yeah, I feel like Messier is underrated because Messier, you know, he's the leader who leads in leading ways. But like he was a super duper talented, like skilled player. But
he
just because he played with Gretzky
who
and he has
in the 80s yeah. when the goalies used to wear tampons on their legs to try to stop the puck.
But to be fair, they really soaked up the sweat. when you're perspirating through your knees.
I do find it interesting, though, that it's Messier's mark that...
It's so funny that you keep saying
it. I don't know why. That Yager is going to break, because you talk about two guys whose off-the-ice life has undeniably, defined who they are. Like, Yager will forever be known as dude with the gambling debts, dude who made his way through Eastern Europe's model community, even at age 44, dude who became a mercenary at the end of his career because he wanted to play in places where there were no income taxes.
Great guy.
Dude who left for Russia. Dude who was a cancer in the locker room in Washington. And then on Messier's case, it's the, you know, Madonna. It's the Vancouver thing. It's, you know, the wielding the power he wielded behind the scenes with the Rangers. Like, there's a lot of sort of parallels, I think, in celebrity between Yager and Messier.
The Gary Coleman picture.
Gary Coleman picture. Also, how about this?
Uh-huh.
Both were second fiddle. Gretzky forever in Gretzky had to... Gretzky's shadow was overcast on Messier. Messier came out of that shadow eventually. Mario's shadow cast over Mario Jr., anagram. And then Yager came out of it eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
I feel like Messier is not thought of as second fiddle, though.
Well, he was like the Fedorov to Yzerman with the Oilers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he won without Gretzky, and then he, you know, saved hockey in 1994, according to many.
God, I talked so much shit that day when they were up 3-2. I thought it was over.
The only difference is that you know, Yager got his power from his hair and Messier got his power from having no hair.
He's like the anti-Samson.
That's right. Anti-Samson.
That's biblical.
He probably had
biblical talk,
yeah. Probably had a hell of a bush down there, though, I'm guessing.
Well, I mean, it was the early 80s. You know, no one was doing anything down there.
I think I saw some of it in that Gary Coleman picture.
No.
Are you looking for an afro to talk about?
Yeah, I was
Link
trying to think
from
of like,
the mod squad down there.
Who's Link from the mod squad?
Yeah, the guy with the big afro.
All right, there.
He had Sam Jackson from Unbreakable down there.
There it is.
Oh, I had this debate with Ruby the other day. Could they make different strokes today? A rich white man with a Park Avenue apartment adopts two black kids from a woman who used to work for him and allows them to explore the world of the rich.
It would have to be like satire.
Have to be reversed.
They couldn't do it straight.
It would have to be a rich black guy who adopts two kids from the country and puts them on Park Avenue.
Yeah.
I think that's what it had to be. I don't think you could get away with it the other way.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If it did the other way, it would have to be like a commentary on society's.
Yep. And along come two, they got nothing but their overalls.
What are you talking about?
What y'all talking about, Mr. D?
What y'all thinking, man? Huh? Where can I spit my tobacco, Mr. D?
Exactly. And to be the poor white stereotype instead of the poor black stereotype.
They could do the facts of life still.
Yeah, there's always going to be women's. It'd be like girls, though. You know. Yeah. Exactly.
What else we got to talk about?
Well, I was going to talk about Yager a little bit.
You're feeling Yager today.
I am, man. I find it to be so exciting when you have Yzerman was like this too. When you have an undeniable, legendary player okay, who gets to a certain point in his career and says, okay, I can't do this thing anymore. I got to change up what I do. And in Eiserman's case, it was becoming a more complete player, becoming a defensive whiz after being an offensive guy. In Jágr's case, it was no longer having the legs to be a fucking comet like he was when he played in the 90s. And to be what I've always kind of compared it to, he's like a post-up player in the NBA.
Yeah.
He's like Rick Mahorn. He's like using his ass.
Backs the ass up.
And wins battles in the corner. So you have that, and then you also have, other than Chelios, a guy who is defined by his dedication to training.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that about Jágr.
Because, like, I'm the same way, because you and I are both dedicated to training.
You go to the gym a lot more than I do.
Yeah.
You have gym stories.
Yeah.
My gym story is, like, I couldn't get the door open to my locker.
My gym stories aren't good, though. I walked in on a guy blow-drying his balls yesterday.
Yeah, I read about that.
Because I went in the morning. I never ever go in the morning, but, like, once every 2 weeks, and that's where, like, usually the old people are blow-drying their balls, apparently.
I did have a question about that.
But why blow-dry?
Does your gym provide blow-dryers, yeah, or was he doing a headstand under the hand dryer?
No. There's some commercial where a woman's doing that, where she's like drying her armpits, and I'm like, I don't get how that works, because it's hot air blowing on your armpit. That's not going to stop you from sweating. But no, yeah, it's like a little thing you put, there's a mirror right there, so he didn't have like a leg up, because he was an old guy, but like he just was kind of like tippy-toeing the one leg, and he had his right hand, and he was just the undercarriage was getting a little cool dry. I guess the towel wasn't enough for him. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he can't reach with the towel.
It makes total sense, because if you go outside with wet sack hair, it's going to be matted for most of the day. So it makes total sense.
And that was the other part of it too. I didn't leave out where it was like I couldn't totally see the balls, because it was like trying to see Nell's house in the woods. It was obscured by all of the foliage that I couldn't really totally make out everything. I'm never gonna. That's gonna be in my head forever.
Nell's house in the woods. And his balls were tay in the wind.
Instead of taking a dip in the lake to wash up, he decided to blow dry. I don't know. It's old people, man. I can't wait to be that guy.
So yeah, Jágr over Messier all day, all night. I couldn't be happier that he's going to be second overall. Do you think he would have?
Nope. Never would have happened.
No, goals, not points.
How many goals back is he at this point?
Oh, Jesus. Come on, man. Like, I had that ready.
He's like 250 or something. He's not even close.
Hockey Reference.
It's more than that.
By the way, if you're not using Hockey Reference, why not? It's a rabbit hole. It's like IMDb for hockey. I'll put it out there like that. Career goals. Gretzky, 894. Jágr, 755.
Oh, so he's down to like...
3 years in the KHL, and then a year lost to the work stoppage. So 4 years, basically.
Well, you can't count that, because Gretzky lost that stuff, too.
Gretzky lost...
94-95.
Yeah, but that's half a season. So still, give that back to him. So right. He'd have 1,000 goals.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't really help. But no, you're saying, like, all right, like if he didn't go to Russia, would he have done it?
This is all very sort of Florida recount. I know that. Like, you know, if you count these, but don't count these.
Right.
I get that. And the argument John Shannon put up last night was, well, if you're going to say, what about Russia, then you should, by that virtue, say, what about the WHA for both Gretzky and Howe, in which case Gordy would be the all-time leading scorer going away.
Well, it's not the NHL's fault. Those guys weren't good enough to get into the NHL. not their problem. No, I don't think it'd be more fun if he was 43 and he was like 14 goals back or something.
I'll say this about Jágr.
Yeah?
Played in the toughest era of any of these guys. Played through the trap years, played with goaltenders that actually learned the position.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about Gretzky and Messier is that, look, Gretzky's on another level. I'm never going to say that Gretzky was a product of his era.
He could have kept playing.
He's
too.
A mutant. He was the best. There's no one touching him.
Like his last year, he had like 90 points in 80 games or something in like the dead puck card.
Yeah, insane. But Messier was a little bit of a product.
Messier played the same era as Gretzky.
Messier had...
And more and worse and beyond.
His last 100-point season was 91-92. He hit 99 and 95-96, which is pretty damn good. But then he had the trail off because he was 34. But... Messier had 165 points in 83-84.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? If you combine the totals of the top two point getters in the NHL today, you might not get to 165.
Yeah. No, Jágr was better. That shouldn't be a debate.
I agree. Now, here is a debate. Mm-hmm. And listen, there are people in our lives that we love. We love them big time.
Boy.
But our friends on the Stick to Sports podcast, Sean Gentile and Ryan Lambert.
Hot takeists.
Hot takeists supreme. Both agree, I believe. I believe Sean agrees with this, right?
Oh, they do. Oh, yeah. Oh, Sean's more vocal about it than Lambert is.
Lambert wrote on Twitter, if Die Hard is a Christmas movie, so is Iron Man 3, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and Lethal Weapon, but none of them are. Don't at me. Well, we're going to at you, sir. Because
it's not the same thing, those movies.
As played out as Die Hard is a Christmas movie is, even more played out is Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. Let me count the ways.
It's every way. It's a Christmas movie.
Let's start with the music, the most obvious thing. When Ode to Joy...
Is Aladdin a cartoon? No, it's not a cartoon. Like, it's a fucking cartoon. Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
When Ode to Joy is the basis for all of the music in the movie, it might be a Christmas movie. When the lead when one of the lead characters' names is Holly, it might be a Christmas movie.
Wow, you're really going deep now on this.
Yeah, I am. It's just I can't read my writing. You have the Christmas party. You have, which, by the way, as you said, is a major point in the plot because essentially it's the day they chose to rob the place, right?
When nobody would be there.
When nobody would be there.
It would be easier to take over.
Easier to take over, exactly.
And John goes out there to visit her on Christmas. For Christmas, he's there.
John, how could you say that after all these years?
Hans. Bubby.
Bubby. All right, you have that. You have things like Al Powell singing Let It Snow. You have a character named Argyle, named after a stocking, in the car listening to Christmas and Hollis.
It's there in every way a movie could be. Just because a child doesn't learn the meaning of Christmas in it doesn't mean it's not a Christmas movie.
Should we talk about...
Yes, we should.
Should we talk about Theo? It's Christmas. It's a time for miracles.
Right.
Should we talk about Now I Have a Machine Gun, Ho, Ho, Ho? Should we talk about Christmas packing tape being used in a critical part of the movie to hold the gun in his back? Should we talk about the fact that Carl, who I'm assuming his last name is Hingis, like in Lebowski... Carl is hung like an ornament when we think he's dead. And that Carl in Polish is Carol, like a Christmas carol.
It's all right there, people.
Should we talk about the fact that at the end of the film, spoiler, because of the giant explosions that happened at Nakatomi Plaza, I'm at Nakatomi Plaza to turn in my car to Swiss cheese. You gotta send it back up now. No, goddamn it, now.
No, goddamn it, now.
The paper is falling from the sky. Falling from the sky on the people below, like snow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Should we talk about the fact...
Oh, no. What's this one going to be?
Should we talk about the fact that John McClane has a big, giant teddy bear that's obviously a present?
Yes. He's there for Christmas.
But more than anything else, I think it's time... that we really focus in on what Die Hard is. And what is Die Hard, Dave Lozo? What is the plot of Die Hard?
It's a fucking Christmas movie.
Terrorists take over a building? No, sir.
What is it?
It's not what Die Hard's about.
Do your bit. What do you got?
Die Hard is about one man's battle to preserve Christmas as a time for family and love and not money and capitalism.
Exactly.
It is a story about a man who is battling against evil forces, taking over, literally taking over Christmas, ending a Christmas party.
That's taking over Christmas.
To take money, to steal their money, the people's money, and keep it for themselves out of greed and out of avarice. The opposite, sir, of the Christmas spirit. And it is about a man. How much of a man is he? He's a man who's down to his undershirt and bare feet. That's how much of a man he is.
Just like Santa is when he gets home after delivering all the presents.
And this man is risking his life.
Yes.
To save Holly, a.k.a. Christmas.
Saving Holly, right? Right?
From the greedy capitalists that are trying to steal all the money and ruin Christmas. Mm-hmm. He just wants to get back to his family.
There's a fucking Christmas tree in half the scenes in the fucking lobby where they're having the party, or the room where they're having the party.
Hans Gruber.
Yes.
A famous name.
Uh-huh.
You know how George Lucas came up with the name of Darth Vader?
How did he do it?
Well, the name Vader is very similar to the name Father. If a child says it.
This yes. is actually what he says.
If a child says, Vader, Father, Vader, I need my cookies.
George Lucas is stupid kids who can't
but
pronounce
it's true.
Things.
Like Darth Vader was named after, was the sound of the word father. Hans Gruber, very close to Hans Gruber. Grabbing with the hands, taking the money.
Mm-hmm.
Holly. Christmas Holly. So that's Die Hard for you. Christmas movie. He's trying to hands grab the money, and he's trying to save Holly.
Case closed, as far as I'm concerned. The case has never been opened. Again, Christmas is key to the plot of the movie. You can make the argument in Lethal Weapon. It's just the thing happening in the background while Gary Busey and his army buddies are murdering dudes, and it just happens to be Christmas. Christmas, it's the movie is set on Christmas Eve and Christmas for a reason. There's Christmas messages, the Christmas spirit. They're robbing the building because it's empty because of Christmas. It's a Christmas movie. You do not need to have like a mom and a dad reconcile who are divorced for the spirit of Christmas for it to be a Christmas movie. It doesn't have to be an overarching thing where like a child gets a gift. Like, what's more of a Christmas movie? Die Hard or Jingle All the Way? Jingle All the Way is just two asshole dads trying to buy a fucking toy for their kid. That could be for a birthday.
And there's a Christmas parade in the middle of the day.
Yeah, like what the fuck is that?
A Turbo Man.
There's first, I want to get the Turbo Man. Then, who else is in that movie? Danny DeVito? Is that the bad guy?
No, it's Sinbad as the mailman.
Oh, Sinbad.
Anakin Skywalker himself, Jake Lloyd, as the kid.
Oh, he's the kid in that movie?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Dad, what's a midichlorian?
Midichlorian is the tiny organisms that give us the force.
Stop it. First, I want to cut off your hand. It's this hot take, diehard shit drives me nuts.
Yeah. Now, you're also, like me, a defender of Love Actually, right?
It's a good movie.
It is a good movie.
I understand that it's, quote, problematic because of how, like, shitty all the dudes are and
how
like, one-dimensional.
Hugh Grant is to his secretary.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he's, pretty much every relationship in that movie, the guy is a dick
mm-hmm.
and the woman is just, like, an afterthought. That, like, I get it.
Yeah.
It's still.
Except for that part with Emma Thompson. That always makes me cry.
What part?
When she realizes that Alan Rickman's cheating on her, and she's thinking it's going to be that fabulous necklace, and it winds up being like
the
CD instead.
By the way, do you believe or do you not believe that he bangs the secretary?
He bangs the secretary.
I didn't think he did.
I think he totally does.
I thought he never got around to it.
I thought it was symbolic that he gave her that the necklace was the thing. Like if the necklace had been for Emma Thompson, then we know he didn't do it. But I think that necklace going to the secretary is like, you don't give a necklace to that someone like that if you're not banging them.
Yeah, but if you're like a desperate, weird old, not weird, but like a desperate,
desperate
horny,
weird old man who puts sprigs of
Harry Potter, I am not banging my secretary. No, I never thought he was, but I read a thing like he was, it was apparently like who's the guy that wrote the movie again?
Oh, director wrote the movie. Regardless, he says that he didn't.
No, he says that he did.
Oh, yeah, he totally did.
Yeah, I just didn't think that was how, I thought it was just, he was just like in a flirtatious thing where he loved the attention. He wasn't necessarily having the sex with her, but yeah.
Having the sex.
Hello. And then there's the weird fucking, the creepy guy from fucking Walking Dead who's trying to bang his best friend's wife all the time. It's like, okay, if you voted for Drew Doughty for the Norris, I don't get it. If you voted for Shane Gossesbear for the Calder, I get it. I disagree with you, but I get it. I get why you don't like Love Actually, but it's a Christmas movie.
All right.
Just like Die Hard.
Real quick, because I know people were asking about Rogue One. We're going to talk about it on next week's show because Lozo's going to see it.
I'm going to see it tomorrow.
Yeah, you don't have to watch the first third of it. You can just kind of come in two thirds of it in because the first third, I don't know if I've told you, is a slog.
Now it's a third because you said the first hour was a slog. Now it's down to a third.
I believe it's a 3 hour movie.
I looked it up. It's 2 hours. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes.
You add in the trailers. All right, it's time for Puck Soup for us to talk about what you want us to talk about. It's time for listener mail.
All right. Question one is, Greg and Dave, can you talk about Rogue One?
Will Morales has a question that he wrote out on his notepad on his phone, then screenshotted it and gave it to us.
Oh, where's
so
this?
Anyone's going to do that much effort? By the way, plug in your phone. Your battery's low.
Oh, I'm up to 72% now. I'm doing good. That guy you're talking about.
That guy, yeah. My wife and my New Year's...
My wife!
Oh, this syntax. My wife and my New Year's Eve day tradition is to stay in and watch a movie trilogy.
Uh-huh.
Starting with last year and going back, the movies have been the Riddick series.
Oh, my God. Leave him. What are you doing? Oh, my God.
Are you telling me
Wait, there's three of those?
Necromongers have found the underverse.
Wait, there's not three of those, is there?
Yeah, there's Pitch Black, Chronicles of Riddick, and then just Riddick.
I don't know.
Where they brought it back to being more like Pitch Black.
Oh, boy.
The Die Hard series. So that's a Die Hard. Oh, okay. So he didn't bother with the last two. Good on you. The Pirates of the Caribbean series.
It's not a bad series.
It's not a bad series, but boy, oh boy, if you're watching those movies back to back.
No, I said there's a lot of bad series. Oh. Like Pirates of the Caribbean. There's four of those.
And finally, The Lord of the Rings, where it all started. Boy, I'm thinking about like how many inches of snow it would take for there to be outside for me to shut myself in and watch either Lord of the Rings or the Pirates series all the way through in a day.
I'm assuming he just means the three, not like the Hobbit, the other Hobbit ones, right?
No.
Like there's no, you can't, you do, there's not enough time in the day.
This year, the front runner is Lethal Weapon. What do you think? Anything else we should consider? I'll tell you, Lethal Weapon's not a bad choice.
There's a four of those though. I'm thinking like trilogies.
Well, I mean, the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy, if you haven't seen it, but I'm assuming that you probably have seen it, or else it would be like the pick.
I wouldn't want to watch that last one again. Oh.
What a lovely, lovely voice.
What a lovely, lovely convenience.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon's a great choice because, maybe it's like, this is like the Shane Black episode of the show. There's character progression through the movies. Now, granted, in the case of Mel Gibson, the progression is going from a supreme badass to a Three Stooges character.
Right.
But, like, there's a flow to them. The characters. I like those Lethal Weapon movies a lot. I think that'd be my choice.
I'm trying to find a better one. Or not a better one, but just, like, a different type one. How about...
Uh-oh.
You sit down with your wife because you want it to be, you know... Have a little romance in there.
Mm-hmm.
The Before Sunrise trilogy.
Hey.
Before Sunrise, Before Midnight, After Midnight.
Those are actually really good movies, I think. I've never seen them.
The last one's bad.
The
first two are good. The last one is just like they wanted to cap it off and it's bad. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in every trilogy, the third one's usually the worst one.
Right. So watch Before Sunrise.
Before Sunset. Before
Sunset, After... Watch those three movies and then watch Training Day and pretend that's where Ethan Hawke's character went afterwards. He became a cop.
It makes sense because in the third one, they're the most miserable fucking couple. You're watching it for 2 hours and you're just like, this is fucking terrible. These two hate each other. I don't want to watch this. And it ends and there's nothing even really like resolved. It's just like, well, all right. Thanks for making this movie, Ethan.
Dave R. wants to know, Vladimir Tarasenko, Stealth Heart Trophy candidate.
Nope.
Oh, I think he is, but I just don't think that like there's going to be... He might get the third pick, although I think that's inevitably going to go to a goalie this year. Yeah.
He's not going to win it. Not stealth. It's like when people say like, what's that word people always want to put before a pick when it's like crazy? Like, what's your blank to win the Stanley Cup? Like, who's your... Oh, man, I did this at Bleacher Report all the time.
Who's your underdog, dark horse?
Bold picks.
Oh, okay.
What's your bold pick for the... Bold is always code for a thing that's not going to happen. Like, Vladimir Tarasenko is not going to win. He's not. It's going to be Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby.
Who remains with the Rangers longer, Tom Ertz Jr. wants to know?
Yeah,
Elaine Vigneault
that.
Or Dan Girardi?
Elaine Vigneault, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Easy.
They'll find it.
Easy. Dan Girardi... he can't go to Vegas, right? He's got that.
Yeah, he's got that. Yeah. Jake Ivey wants to know, not counting your own, what are your top three podcasts of the year? I would say for me, Doughboys, the podcast about fast food. I would say from what I've listened to, I'm trying to think what I listened to. Film Spotting, always up there. Great film discussion with those boys.
As we take out our phones and tap on my podcast.
The third one would be. I don't want to say Doug Loves Movies because that's like sort of self-serving. Big fan of Recode Media with Peter Kafka, which is a show that covers people in the tech industry, but also people in the media industry. He's done some really interesting interviews with movers and shakers in this dear industry that I'm in. So I like that one too. Peter Kafka. And in fact, Adrian Wojnarowski, who we just saw before, did an episode of that one and threw shade at everybody else in his industry, which is a lot of fun.
He was pumped because the Iron Sheik just followed him on Twitter.
That's right. What about you? What would be your top three for this year?
I'm not a huge podcast guy. Like I listen to Jonah's and I listen to Katie Nolan's, depending on the guest. Like if it's like somebody I'm interested in, but like, you know, like Jonah just had Carl Ravitch on. I'm not going to listen to that one. But like when you had on Tim Kirkchin, like I like Tim Kirkchin. I'm going to listen to that one. Mm-hmm. Katie's kind of the same way. Like she'll have like JJ Redick on and I'm like, eh, no thanks. But if he has like Michael Ian Black, I'm like, yeah, sure. So, I mean, besides that, you know, Erin Gloria Ryan on Twitter.
Yeah.
She writes for a new place now, The Daily Beast.
Daily Beast, yeah.
She has a podcast called Girl Friday. And like it's not all girls, like they usually have like a guy once in a while, but like it's just funny, like you're just talking about like politics and stuff, so
she's funny.
Those are my podcasts.
Cody Hudeman wants to know, have you ever done Times Square on New Year's Eve? Have you ever done it? I don't know the answer to that.
And like, god, when I was like 22 or 23, we were so stupid, we were like, all right, let's go to Times Square and do the Times Square New Year's Eve thing, and I'm like, yeah, woo. Meanwhile, we left to go at like 9:30. Got to Penn Station at like 10:15. Started walking down up towards Times Square. Got within like 10 blocks, and we were like, "Can we get around these like gates?" Because they had like those metal like cops are like, "Are you guys fucking idiots? Like, you can't get up there now." It's like, "No, we can, we can." And they're like, "Do you have open beers in those bags?" All right, we gotta go. See ya. That was as close as I ever got.
I did it about, I think it was like 19, and me and some friends from Maryland and also some friends from back in Jersey all went and. We did the same thing. We got to Times Square late and noticed that it is an impenetrable sea of people and security gates. So what we did was we actually, I think we watched it from outside, right outside of a subway station, like literally standing in the doorway of a subway station near Times Square. And then the ball dropped. Everybody celebrated. It's a really, I mean, to answer your question, it is an amazing moment, like when it strikes midnight and everybody there just starts hugging and singing and it's actually quite lovely. But then the aftermath is scary. So we all hightailed it back to Penn Station and got on the first train we could to Jersey before it got crazy. And it was standing room only. Everybody was shit hammered. Not as fun, but still an experience. It's an experience. Yeah. I mean, it's much like a lot of things in New York. It's something you do once and then you don't do it again. Like walk up to the fucking torch on the Statue of Liberty.
I've never done that.
Yeah. Like you do it once and then you call it a day. But it is a very singular experience that if you're not someone who hates crowds, I would say do it once in your life.
I've never done any touristy shit. I've never gone to the top of like the Empire State Building. I've never gone to the top of 30 Rock. I was on a boat one time and we rode past the Statue of Liberty. It's way bigger than I ever realized. But I've never like I'm like Chandler on Friends when he brings in Anna Faris. Come on, you know the episode where
No, I do.
Where like he's like, oh, this is so awesome. That's gonna be me at some point when I go and like see all the stuff. But until then,
Skywise wants to know worst Christmas dessert. Is there like a specific Christmas desserts?
I was in Starbucks on Thursday, and I was trying to decide what I wanted. I don't want a coffee. I'm like, I want to get something else. What do they got? And they had some sort of fruitcake flavored cappuccino or some shit. And I almost threw up on that little cold case of like yogurt because it was the idea of putting that fruitcake flavor in my mouth in coffee form made me so sick. Fruitcake is disgusting.
Fruitcake is disgusting. And unfortunately, I think that we're on opposite sides of the battle lines for the great eggnog wars.
Oh, I love the
eggnog. I
fucking hate eggnog.
So good.
In all of its forms.
So good. Ruby says she makes it. When's she going to make some for us?
I don't know. Maybe she's not going to make it because she knows how much I hate it and she'd just be wasting her time.
Come on, Ruby. I'll drink it. Aw.
Hey. Just... I like the tone.
Come on, baby. You know I'll be over there and drink that eggnog.
All right. And finally, two more. Would you rather have a threesome with the Sedins, the Stalls, or the Bens? Asked Agu Eat World.
Wait, it's girl free? It's just all the dudes? Just me and two dudes?
Yeah. Would you rather have a threesome with the Sedins, the Stalls, or the Bens? Maybe, I mean, we could either have women that... No, I guess it's just us and the dudes.
It has to be, because then it's no longer... Then it becomes
an
orgy.
The Bens are out for obvious reasons.
Why? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Jamie's not going to take care of me.
I don't appreciate a selfish lover.
No reciprocation? Sorry, James.
I go with the Stalls because, frankly, the Sedins would be confusing.
Oh, I'm going to go with the Sedins because it's cool to say you had a menage a trois with twins. That's a cool thing to tell people, right?
And isn't that twins.
I love menage with Sedins. Having sex with three because they're twins. And I...
But you wouldn't be freaked out when you're having sex with Daniel and you look up and Henrik's feeling it?
No, I could, like, say really funny things during the sex. I could be like, so the Canucks are in last place. Looks like we're bottoming out again here, aren't we? Because we're having
sex. I think it'd be actually quite sensual because they probably are able to have amazing sex without even speaking. They just know where the other one's going to be the entire time.
I'm like, we're all in bed together, and like Daniel like rolls away from me. I'm like, where are you? Oh wow, you're hiding the runner. How'd you know Henrik was gonna be there? Wait, yeah, I feel like actually that's a better point. Maybe I should go with the Stalls because I'll feel left out. The Sedins are gonna. I'm gonna be like Ross on Friends when he has the menage with his ex-wife. And
Lozo puts his hands behind his head. He's like, how was I, boys? And they're like,
you're a bit of a Louis. We were hoping you'd be more of an Anson or a Burrow.
We're looking for someone to burrow in there and get the puck, and you were just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, but you know we paid a lot for you, and I feel like you're a bit of a Louis.
Wait, they're paying for me to do this? I'm not a whore. I'm gonna do it because I want to.
At least you're not a redeem.
And you, yeah, it's like the sex is bad for the first 45 minutes.
This guy's a straight up verbata.
No. It's like I'm really bad for a while, and then I totally redeem myself.
All right. Finally.
Stalls are too big, too.
If you can give a Christmas prep... Well, Eric Stalls. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Jamie Benn.
Well, if Jamie Benn was like, dude, I'm all about going down on people, I'd be like, I'm in, Jamie. Yeah. Bring Jordy to... But I can't.
I would always forget Jordy's name. Like, I know your brother, and I know you're on the team, maybe like cuz of him or whatever, but like...
Which one's older again? How are you older but not as good? I don't understand.
Why isn't there a Ben? Is there a Benjamin Ben? Why wasn't Jordy Benjamin Ben? Like, honestly, you have one shot in life to be born with a gift of a last name.
They're going to eventually get around to it. They're eventually going to get around the Ben.
Yeah, or any name. Around Gentle Ben.
Big Ben.
Big Ben.
Yeah.
There you go. B-I-G-G-E.
That's the thing. Jamie the whole time in bed would be like, call me Big Ben.
Yeah.
No. Stop making it weird, Jamie.
You ever been to Delaware? No. Well, Ben Dover. What?
Where would it happen, too? Because if it happens in the city where they play, maybe I would pick Dallas for the barbecue afterwards.
Oh, seriously? The post-coital options?
I really want to make sure I make the right choice. Vancouver's got good seafood.
Are you
Vancouver,
kidding me?
Vancouver.
You get done with the Sedins, you're all in a sweaty pile, then one of them rolls over and says, okay, time for meatballs.
Let's
you're
get
like,
some sushi.
Whoa!
Well, that's Sweden. I'm talking like a nice sushi platter probably afterwards, and then we can eat the sushi off each other.
I guess it all depends on what kind of barbecue you like. Either like Carolina barbecue or you like Texas barbecue. Or a Juicy Lucy,
no
courtesy of Eric Stahl.
No one's in Carolina anymore.
Jordan is. Oh, wait. Holy shit. Are we talking about different Stahls? Well, were you talking about Mark?
Mark and Eric.
I was talking about Jordan and Eric.
Why? Why would you not? Why would Mark Stahl not be in the Stahl threesome?
Because I mean, I like Jordan a lot better than I like Mark. This whole time we were having sex with different Stahls and didn't realize it?
Oh, my God. This is so embarrassing. This is such an unprofessional podcast where we don't plan ahead to talk about our menages with NHL players.
Jared Stahl looking wistfully from the window as it all goes down.
Oh, that Stahl. Oh, I was thinking of the shitty fourth Stahl.
I was thinking Jordan Stahl.
I was thinking
from the Hurricanes.
I was thinking Mark and Eric.
Right. Yeah, I know you were. No, right. You didn't. This is no confusion. You're thinking about Mark and Eric. I was thinking of Jordan and Eric.
Who's also I thought you said
about Jerry.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. You were thinking.
Who again is at the window wistfully looking at?
Yeah, who's just like, guys.
Wow, this whole time.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Should we like recut this whole part over again about us menaging
like
players
when there's surprises?
Yeah.
Finally, Dylan Betts wants to know if you could give a Christmas gift to any NHL team. What team would it be and why?
I wouldn't give shit to any NHL team.
I would give...
What would you give? Inspire me.
Speaking of the Dallas Stars, I would wrap up any goaltender with a save percentage above 905 that can play 60 games in a season and
Ryan
give
Miller.
It to them.
Ryan Miller.
Anybody of that nature to them straight away to get them back into this thing.
So it's like a Toys for Tots thing where we're going to give a gift to someone in need. Okay.
It could be like Yankee Swap where you take a really good gift from somebody else and give it to a team.
It's really tough to shift from like player menaging to like analysis of what teams need for the down the stretch.
Like, my gift is my boo.
My gift is my tender lips.
I give Connor a line mate.
I would give Carolina players. you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like they're like six deep.
They play good hockey, but they just don't have a lot of talented dudes. Like, I wouldn't just give them like a guy. Let's trade them three guys at the deadline so they can make a run at Columbus and get Columbus out of the playoffs so we can go on the podcast on April 15th and be like, suck it, Columbus fans, told you so.
Oh boy, I've had that daydream a lot in the last couple weeks, but I don't think it's gonna happen.
But the daydream of Jordan and Eric, or the daydream of Columbus not making
the daydream of Columbus, you know, bottoming out at one point, and like the five people that have really upset me on Twitter.
Wow, you get really mad at Twitter.
No, I'm not. It's not about that. It's just like I said, they're impeding my enjoyment of this whole thing. So, all right, that's this week's puck soup. Next week, year in review.
We're gonna review the year. January 1st, 2016.
Yep,
it was a warm day, warmer than usual.
January 2nd, a bit rainier. I remember having a crawler.
I was a little hungover from the Winter Classic, but I only threw up once.
All right. Well, I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo's Puck Daddy blog. You could read me on Puck Daddy on Yahoo Sports. I'm at Wyshynski on Twitter. I do this podcast and the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast when Jeffy has a chance to do it. He's a very busy man,
Jeffy,
and. Time has basically run out for the bonus stuff for buying my book. But if you want to, take your eye off the puck. How to Watch Hockey by Knowing Where to Look is available at all places where books are sold. And maybe there'll be more books coming. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Here's Dave Lezo.
Now, it probably won't be an in-depth novel, this particular book, but it may be a fun sort of post-holiday hockey fan treat for not a lot of money, for not a large sum. You won't have to take out a loan for this type of book, but it could be coming soon.
Yeah, it's the kind of book that you can, you know, take with you wherever you go.
Right.
Not necessarily have to lug it around.
No.
Maybe have it exist in the cloud.
Where things exist
that
aren't analog.
That's right.
That's what we could be doing. But you know, just something to keep in mind.
That's right.
Post December 25th.
Maybe. Well, Merry Christmas, Dave Lozo. Yeah, my gift as always is sitting across the table from you, watching you knock over your empty water bottle while I'm on my second Red Bull.
How great was that glove save?
It was never solid.
Never touched the ground. and I'm thankful too for sitting across from you and more the check Nerdist sends every 3 months. That's really what I'm into.
And also the obsessive compulsiveness that in which I check 6 minutes into the show to see if the audio is working.
Yeah, like that'll be like on the bonus episode, like our 25 year anniversary episode. We'll have the first 6 minutes of this episode played back with the static. And on that note, I think I'm going to say goodbye. And
bye,
that's
Merry
it.
Merry Christmas.
And happy holidays, Trump's America. What up?
Now leaving Nerdist.com.